Welcome to Planning for Retirement with Scott Nelson. Plan well, retire happy.
All right, well, welcome to our Planning for Retirement podcast. Today, we're excited to have a special guest, Allison Olson from Fairway Mortgage, and loans can be fun.
Hi, Allison. Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Also here is Elisa Zaris, who is my right-hand person. She does everything expedient in the office. So I invited Allison in because we've gone through a period of time recently where interest rates have come back up. So all the savers have been applauding and cheering. But people in the real estate market in particular, and automobiles, etc., to a degree, kind of rocked their world.
Oh, it's been brutal, to say the least. And it's been like a year and a half of just pretty bad rates, you know, compared to what we had. And when sales prices are so high, those two are not a good combo. And people just don't want to do anything at that point. So yeah, it's been a little bit rough.
Yeah.
To say the least.
Yeah. And you know, how long can we wait? We're going to wait for them to come back down to 2%. What do you say to people that say that?
Oh, it's so hard because we were living through a time period where it was just unheard of, right? And it's probably a once in a lifetime type of deal that rates are going to be that low.
Like, I don't remember them ever being.
No, that low. And that's the thing. And that's not normal. And they probably shouldn't have been, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, when you try to stimulate the economy and all the other things that the government does to, quote unquote, help, sometimes that's the result. It was great while we had it. I think I heard a stat that was like 80% of people have a rate below 4% right now. And they don't want to leave that. I mean, I moved out of my neighborhood and I left a 2.75 to 7.25. And that payment change is brutal, but it was important for me to make that change, right? Mm-hmm. Most people won't do that. You can't stimulate the economy. You can't get people to do stuff when the rates are 7%. Now, I think it's realistic to think that we can get into the fives. And we're fairly close because some of our rates are low sixes right now.
And there's still some buy down opportunities,
yes,
right?
That's one thing that people don't understand is you can actually have the seller pay some extra money, buy the rate down permanently. You can also do temporary buy downs. So like if you know that you're going to be getting, you know, if rates are going to continue to go down, you can temporarily buy it down for the first, you know, 3 years, 1, 2, or 3 years. There's all sorts of buy downs, but you have options to get decent rates. People just don't always know about those. And there's also some cool stuff where builders can buy rates down for their people that will eventually buy their home. So they just buy kind of a pool of money, say it's $10 million, and they want to buy it to 5% or 4%. They can do that. And then they can market that to their clients like, hey, it's 4%. So if you guys know any builders that need that, let me know.
That's very interesting. I did not know that.
Yeah. And yeah. So sellers are also able to do that. We have a program right now where sellers can basically set aside like this is the rate that I'm offering on my house. So lending has gotten a little bit creative to try to help stimulate people to buy because it's been brutal for everybody. I mean, some of my favorite underwriters that have been at my company for years and years got let go. There's just not enough business. But some of these ones where you do the buy downs, it can make all the difference in the world for your payment.
Mm-hmm.
So I recommend people do that. And they may end up refinancing, but that's okay. What happens in the market if rates go down, say goes down to 5%, 4%, guess what also happens? Sales prices go up because now there's competition again. And so I tell people, buy your house now, do one of these buy downs, and you may refinance later, or you just stick with your buy down and be happy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, and the real estate market's kind of interesting because people basically are buying a house not based on the price of the house, but based on the size of the payment.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Can it fit the budget?
I have a question.
Yeah.
So what is something that you recommend to people that come in and speak with you? They really want to buy a house and they're nervous for the rates. What's something that puts their mind at ease that you tell them?
I mean, most of the time I tell people, like, where is your maximum comfortable monthly payment rate? When I'm running their numbers, I am basing it off of what they told me they are comfortable with. And then I tell them, you do qualify for this, but unless you know there's a promotion coming up or something like that, we don't want to go above what you said you're comfortable with. But a lot of times we tell them, hey, rates are going to go down at some point. At least that's statistically and historically what has happened. Because anytime you kind of get into a recession, they have to stimulate the economy. How do you do that? You lower some rates, right? And so I say, if you can stomach the payment now, it's just going to get better down the road. And most people that are doing loans right now, I tell them, you will be refinancing. And so make sure that you can stomach this payment. And then if rates get better, then all the better.
I think another hang up people have is they go into a 30-year mortgage or a 15-year mortgage thinking, I'm going to have this loan for 15 or 30 years.
And you're not.
But I heard a statistic, and I'll just invite you to share what you know about that. But what is the average tenure of a mortgage loan?
It's like 4 to 5 years. Okay. And so now I think with these sub 4 rates, it's probably going to be a little bit longer, right? Mm-hmm. But that's the average. It's been like 4 to 5 years for most people. And when I look at my life and the refinances I've done or the movement I've done, I don't know that I had any of them longer than 4 or 5 years.
It's interesting.
Yeah. No, people think that they're committing to 30 years at this rate. You're not. If the situation gets better, you can refinance or you can move or whatever. So I think a lot of people do have that mindset of I'm stuck, and you're not.
No. I think that that's where a financial advisor would come into play when they're preparing for a mortgage before coming and talking with you.
Yeah.
Kind of idea of where they're at and what they can afford. And I think that's interesting, 4 to 5 years.
Yeah. So that's the thing. And even in these situations where rates are high right now, we tell people you're marrying the house, but you're only dating the rate. Which you're not even necessarily marrying the house because you can always switch that. But we kind of try to bring that up to them where you're not committing to 30 years at this rate, right? Mm-hmm. You're dating. You're kind of checking them out, seeing if you like them, right? And if something better comes along, you're free to make that choice.
Yeah.
No, and they should. So as you know, in our practice, we try to help people retire. That's kind of our primary focus, although we're getting younger and younger clients all the time, which then brings to the conventional mortgage question.
Correct.
I mean, I would much rather see someone, if they're going to be in the area for at least 2 or 3 years anyway, see them building equity in their own property rather than building the equity in the landlord's property via rents, because rents are just as crazy.
Yeah, and so currently rent increases are slowing down. It's about 1% right now. The last ones were like 2%, but we were so high over the last several years. We have all these little, you know, cliche things we say in the mortgage world, but it's like you are paying a mortgage. It's just not your own, right? So why wouldn't you just get your own house, get that equity, and not pay for the landlord? Now, some people think that they can't qualify, which isn't necessarily true. So we like to have those conversations just to say, okay, you may not right now, but here's what you need to do in order to get there, right? You just give them kind of a pathway how to do it.
Yeah, I think a lot of times people are just scared to take the first step. But I think getting knowledge and talking to a professional, you're under no obligation.
No, and we love to just educate people. And that's half the battle, is making them feel comfortable and know what they're doing. Because you know how intimidating something is if you don't understand it. You don't want to do it. It's overwhelming.
Right. And a lot of people take the ostrich approach and just stick their head in the sand and hope it all goes away.
Seriously, we see that all the time. Well, and I think what we're also seeing right now is a lot of people think that the housing market is going to crash. And so I hear that all the time, but I kind of look at it, and you may disagree, so it's, you know, pipe up, but a lot of times it's just supply and demand, right? And so over the years, builders have not built enough homes to support the population. And so it's still supply and demand. If there's not enough houses for as many people as want to buy them, the prices go up. That's simple economics, right?
Right.
So we're still in a situation where there's not enough housing. Now, unfortunately, sales prices are high in a lot of places, which keeps a lot of people from pulling that trigger. But you're going to have to do it at some point because you're paying either your landlord's mortgage or your own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. And in our particular area here in northern Utah, we have a lot of people moving to the area from other places like California, for example. There's still good jobs available here if you have the proper skill set.
Exactly.
And we are in our area importing people in this
particular. And they think we've got great prices on stuff.
Well, by comparison.
Yeah.
But there's only so much land and there's only so many houses. And so I think that's going to keep the price up. I don't think we're going to see
it. Yeah, there's definitely a shortage of housing. And you can see evidence of that fact in the fact that how many like multi-unit, like apartments, condos, all these things, they're going up everywhere. And every city is needing to do that to try to meet those needs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're seeing it here. So talking about rates and mortgage payments and decisions along that line, as we work with retirees, we are seeing people coming in and they're getting close to retirement. their mortgage balance is getting closer to paid off. They've got a low rate on the loan, and they're wanting to take money from their retirement plan that's earning.
Oh, no.
Depends on where it's invested. Sure. I mean, last year was a decent year in the markets, but we've got some accounts where, you know, they're getting 9-10% return, and they're wanting to take money out and pay off a 2.5% mortgage.
No, not a good plan.
They just want that feeling of, oh, I've got it paid off.
You know what? That is such a thing that we have been taught from, like, the womb, I say. Because, like, people would have, like, mortgage burning parties. When they paid off their thing, they went and burned their paperwork, right? Mm-hmm. Yay, we paid it off. And sometimes you have to ask yourself, what's the point of that? Because we're lucky if we put 10% of our earnings towards retirement, right? And well, you go, wait, we just put 30 or 40% of our income into our house, and we want to just have it sit there, not doing anything for us. Because no matter what, you're getting appreciation on your house, but the money you put into your house doesn't gain by the same percentage as, like, if you put it in the market.
Yeah, no, so, it's true. So, you know, smart use of funds.
Absolutely.
But I have here on my desk three books that I don't know if you've seen. Have you read any of these?
Yeah, two of them I gave to you. So I've read those two.
Those two for sure. But no, the authors are well known. So Don Graves, he teaches at the American College of Financial Services. And specifically, he teaches about reverse mortgages, how they work, and how to use that. Harlan, we got to meet when he came to town, and how that's a tool. And then Wade Fow is one of the perhaps preeminent experts on financial planning for retirement specifically. And all of them are talking about reverse mortgages. You know, we have people that we have referred. We have some mutual clients together where reverse mortgage was ideal for them. It was the right answer. But what would you have to tell our listeners about reverse mortgages?
One of the biggest things that I tell them is what you think you know about them may not be accurate. There's been a lot of changes in reverse mortgages, and especially since 2015, they really kind of address the things that cause people a lot of heartburn. You know, people are worried, oh, the bank will take my house. A reverse mortgage is the same as any other house. They won't take your house unless you're not fulfilling your obligation, you're not paying your taxes, your property insurance. They don't just take your house, right? They don't have any special, like, right to your property different than a regular mortgage. So that's one thing I want people to know. But it allows you to access the equity in your home, which can help you have cash flow in retirement, which is really probably the hardest part of retirement. You need cash flow.
That's probably the concept that we are challenged the most in getting across to people, because they've been so conditioned all their life that it's rate of return. I need to have a good yield on these assets. I need to build
this nest egg.
This nest egg to a certain number. But once you've retired, that really isn't the measure. The measure now is,
can you survive each month?
It's cash flow.
Yeah.
It's how can I have income for the rest of my life? And as you pointed out, many people have not saved adequately for retirement.
Isn't the percentage like less than a third of Americans are prepared? Is there a stat that you know? Because that's what we're told on my end in the reverse world, is they're not quite prepared.
What is it that we tell our, when we do our classes, is that most people take more time planning a vacation than they do planning for their retirement.
I think that's so true, though. And it's hard because, you know, we have our 401ks and we think that we're hoping that that will carry us through. And most of the time there's a shortfall. But most people have a ton of equity in their homes by the time they're 62 or 65. So you need to be 62 for a reverse mortgage. There are some that allow at 55. So we'll talk about there. They're proprietary and that sort of thing. But you can get a reverse mortgage at 55. And I got that changed with the state, just so you know. We went through a legislative session and got some things changed. Utah was kind of hurting our seniors, and I had to educate them on why this is not okay.
They still tax Social Security.
Which is just, you, like, double taxation. Like, there's just something wrong with that. Don't get me started, Scott.
I was actually going to ask. I was going to ask about that. How does that come into play with reverse mortgages?
What's really nice about it is that it's their equity. It's kind of like if you went and pulled a home equity line, you don't have to pay taxes on that.
It's a loan.
It's the same concept with a reverse mortgage. So there is no tax. Like, well, okay, I'm not a tax professional, But there's really not a tax ramification of, oh, if you pull money out of your reverse mortgage, now you have to pay X amount. It's yours. That's what's so nice about it. So one thing I do want people to understand is there's different ways you can receive your money on a reverse mortgage. There's one called a lump sum where you can say, okay, there's X amount available to me. I'm going to take it all right now, spend it, stick it in my bank, send it to my financial planner named Scott Nelson, yes. You know, stuff like that.
Is that possible? I thought they limited that to 50% of the available in a year.
What a person can pull out is solely based on their age, the value of their home. They can't pull 50% right now. Because rates are higher. So as rates go up, they can get to less equity because what they're trying to do is make sure that no matter what, people still have equity in their home. Okay.
I guess I didn't phrase my question right. It was my understanding that they couldn't take more than half of the
available reverse mortgage lump sum. So on the lump sum, they can take it all.
Okay.
First thing, the line of credit, you're correct. So they basically, and it's not 50%, but it's a percentage, right? So the first year, you can only get to a certain point, you know, or a certain amount. And then day 366, you know, second year, you can get to the rest of it.
Okay.
And they're trying to prevent people from blowing it, right? Which is, unfortunately, a lot of people do because they don't plan. And they just think this is the first time in their life. All of a sudden they have $100,000 to do what they want. And then they go, you know, remodel or they whatever. They go buy the thing that they never bought, which is not the idea behind pulling the money from a reverse mortgage. So you have the lump sum. You have a line of credit, which is really cool because let's say, for instance, you don't need the money right now because you have Social Security coming in and other things. If you don't use the line of credit, your line of credit actually increases. So you may start with a $150,000 line of credit and it becomes a $200,000 line of credit over time. So any unused portion of the line of credit can continue to grow throughout the loan's life. Which is pretty cool because down the road, you may need long-term care. You may need in-home care, you know, those kinds of things, and you have more money. Now, the line of credit is also nice because let's say, for instance, you had to get $50,000 out because something was happening, but then you got inheritance. You can pay it back down. Mm-hmm. And then that available balance continues to grow. So the line of credit I like because oftentimes you get more money, like available total over the lump sum option. But you can use it and pay it back. I tell people it's a low interest credit card against your house. That's the easiest way to explain it, right? If anybody's had an equity line, it's the same concept, right? You can use it. You can pay it down. It has an interest rate that is adjustable and adjusts with the market. So it is higher right now, but it's still not as high as a credit card, nowhere near it. And then there's also another option called tenure, T-E-N-U-R-E, which somebody can say, hey, I want $1,500 a month for the life. And you can do that. Now with 10 years, say for instance, the loan says you can get $1,500 a month, but you need $2,000. I can give you $2,000, but it will eventually run out where they can't send you $2,000 anymore. And we know that date, right? It's something like, hey, if you need $500 extra a month, it runs out in 22 years or whatever that number is. So those are kind of the options. And you can do combinations where you can have some line of credit and some tenure. Which is kind of nice. So if somebody just has a shortfall of like, say, $500 a month, but they want some line of credit, that is an option as well. With the lump sum, it's kind of like over and done. You just pulled your money and you still don't have to make a mortgage payment every month.
Especially for those looking to retire, the cash flow.
That's key, right?
It is.
Because you don't really have the earning potential that you used to have. And so when you're like, hey, I've got a shortfall of $500, how am I going to get that?
Yeah.
And you can get it from your house. It's an interesting concept because people are totally okay pulling money from their 401k or the retirement things, but they're just like, I can't pull it from my house. And you have to really sit with yourself and say, why? And a lot of people, well, I want to leave it to my kids. Less than 5% of kids actually keep the physical house, you know, so that's not a great reason to keep it. People want to leave stuff to their kids. But, you know, I think if your kids are worth a hill of beans, they want you comfortable in retirement and not eating cat food so that they can have, you know, your money when you pass away.
I know Scott actually talked to a client yesterday about this very thing. Most kids don't want the house. They want to sell it.
Well, I look at it like my parents are 80 something. I'm 45, right? If my parents pass away right now, yeah, okay, yeah, money's great and whatever. But if my parents were struggling to make ends meet.
Right.
In no situation do I want them suffering so that I can get their money when they pass away. But a lot of times, by the time the parents pass away, you should be old enough and established enough that you don't need it. I mean, everybody likes it, but you hope that you've talked to your financial planner, Scott Nelson, you know, and planned for that.
So some of the things that people ask me as we bring up the topic.
Yeah.
are, well, I'm turning the house over to the bank.
Yes, you're doing the same thing when you get a conventional mortgage. It's treated exactly the same.
Yeah, it's just collateral.
But they think about it. They do. They think that you've all signed some magical document that the bank can come take your property willy-nilly. And that's just not true. They do put a lien against your property just like they would on a regular conventional mortgage. And if you pay it off, they remove the lien. It's the same concept. A lot of people are worried that, you know, when they pass away, they just take the house. And that's not true. So if they have equity in the home, that goes to their estate. And I do recommend people setting up trusts so that it goes properly and they don't have to go through the court system and go through probate. But if there's equity, the family gets it. If there is no equity, and let's say we've had the worst market ever and things are upside down, your family doesn't have to pay the remaining balance. They can walk away from it. It is the only loan that is against a house and not a person. It doesn't even show up on a person's credit report. So yeah. There's a lot of misconceptions about it. And one of the things I like to do with people first is send them some of these books and other educational pieces that we have that helps them understand what they actually are. Because there were people that have lost their houses, but do you want to know why? They didn't pay their taxes for 5 years. It wasn't a surprise. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And back in the day when you did a reverse mortgage, like a husband or wife could go get a reverse mortgage just by themselves and leave their spouse off. So then all of a sudden the spouse with the mortgage passes away and they have essentially just, you know, ruined their spouse's chance of staying in the home because they weren't on the loan. That has changed. You cannot get a reverse mortgage without your spouse being on it. And your spouse can be younger than 62. As long as one person's eligible, you can put the other person on the loan. You can probably have less access to as much money because they are basing it off of the younger person's age. But there's so many misconceptions, and I love talking to people about it because I can tell them what it really is and what it really isn't.
Yeah. No, that's great. And we love having your cards in the entry so we can refer you to people.
Thank you.
No, reverse mortgage is a tool.
It's a tool. It's not for everybody. It's for a lot of people.
For most Americans reaching retirement age, most of their net worth is in two places. It's in their 401k and in their house.
Absolutely.
And if they haven't saved enough for retirement, the reverse mortgage can be a tool to provide either supplemental income, an emergency fund.
I love it just for that sake, you know, having money available.
It can provide an income bridge if they're wanting to, say, for whatever reason, they wanted to defer their Social Security to age 70.
That's a huge point.
And they didn't want to draw down their other funds. That's a place where they can get an income tax free, by the way. And when we get into the whole retirement plan, there's so many moving parts.
Yes.
So if we find someone retiring before their full retirement age for Social Security and before Medicare, and they've retired, so they've left their group health insurance plan, so they've gone to the marketplace, this is not going to show up as income. So they'll get a lower health insurance premium while they're getting to Medicare age.
We do have to be careful with reverse mortgages because if you pull it from your reverse mortgage and put it in your bank account, it can affect.
Well, the 1099s on the earnings.
Yeah, so you have to be careful, you know, if you're trying to keep your income appearing to be low, you don't pull it out at certain times. Yeah. So that is one thing to be aware of.
And if we're doing Roth conversions, because we believe income tax rates have to go up in the future, it's just a math problem. The government's spending more than they're bringing in. Then this is a place where they can pay the taxes from.
Yes.
So they keep more of the qualified money in the Roth account as their.
I want to talk about that a little bit more because some people may not understand that. So, you know, you have this Roth that you have to pay taxes on when it comes out, right? Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times.
Well, the traditional IRA you have to pay taxes on.
When it comes out, right?
Yeah.
Is it the Roth IRA you paid post-tax?
Yeah, Roth IRAs are after-tax dollars going in. So if you have it in a traditional 401k or traditional IRA and you want to convert it to a Roth,
you're going to pay tax. Okay.
That is a taxable event.
Yes. So you have this IRA, you want to, you know, transfer it to a Roth or whatever, you have to pay taxes on that. And like you said, we know tax rates are going to go up. Have they gone down, like, historically? Not really. I mean, if you draw a line, right?
Well, historically, we're at near lowest levels for income tax rates
in
America.
It doesn't feel like it to me because I look at my paycheck and I'm like, wow, you just took like 30-something percent of my income.
Yeah, well, shameless plug. We're doing a retirement class at Weber State.
Okay, I'll go there. I need to come up there. I can't get my husband to do anything, so I'm going to send him.
It's we'll on come a to Saturday.
The class. Okay.
Yeah, come on.
We'll come up to the class because, yeah, my husband has the analysis paralysis thing.
So. That's okay. So is he the engineer?
Yes, he's the engineer.
Okay.
So, but the whole point is taking that Roth conversion right now, you pay the taxes at a hopefully lower rate than in the future. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons to do that. But you can use the reverse mortgage to help pay that tax bill.
Yeah, correct. So you keep more in mm-hmm. the tax free. So if you look at the world the way the IRS does, they're going to put all of your various assets into one of three categories. It's either taxable, meaning you're going to get a 1099 at the end of the year,
yep.
whether you took money out or not, you still get to report those earnings in the year that they were earned.
Right.
Or you have a tax deferred account where typically you're getting a deduction for the dollars you're putting in and it grows tax deferred. But when you pull them out, it's ordinary income. It's not capital gains. It's ordinary income, just like if it were a check. Or it's going to be, the IRS says tax advantage. I prefer the term tax free. It's catchier.
Right. But, it makes me feel better about things.
Right. And so if we want to get more into the tax-free account as opposed to having it in a 1099 type mm-hmm. of an account, this is a way to do that and have it go over.
I think people don't realize that reverse mortgages can actually be like a tax strategy and a retirement planning tool. That it's not just for the destitute. I think some people have viewed the reverse mortgage as like a last resort, and it's not. I am getting a reverse mortgage the minute I turn 62 because I want that line of credit to grow and I want to be able to utilize my equity and, you know, all those things and to stop making a house payment and put that money into investments, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. So to me, there's strategy behind a reverse mortgage. Yeah, it can help the person that just doesn't have money and there is no other option. Absolutely, that can help. But it can also be used as a retirement tool.
It can, certainly. And, you know, in another application, we had clients in last week. He's about to retire. She is from back east and would really love to return to that area. They spent a month there last summer. They said it was wonderful by the ocean, by family and friends. It was just great. But real estate prices are much higher there.
Yeah.
And so I suggested that there was a way.
There was a way.
That they could sell their debt-free house
mm-hmm.
and get a house back there and still have no house payment.
So, okay. So this is what a lot of people don't know. And I'm glad for your little segue into that. You can buy a house with a reverse mortgage. And a lot of people don't know that. So right now with rates high and depending on your age, you know, you may be 60 to 70% down payment. But then you never have to make a payment again, right? Mm-hmm. When rates were really low, people had to put about 50% in. So you were essentially doubling your money, right? You had $250,000, it got you a $500,000 house. Same concept is true, but you have to put more into it right now. But picture that. You want to go back there. You want to go back east. The houses are more expensive. You sell the house here. You put it there. And we can tell them exactly, hey, it calculates to this amount of sales price so that they can do their shopping. Now, when rates change, and with reverse mortgages, rates typically change once a week. We kind of know what's coming. And so we can kind of tell people, hey, rates are getting better. So that means you can put less money in and those sorts of things. They call them reverse for purchases. And I love it.
Yeah. So it's a tool. It's nothing to be scared of.
No. And we educate you so it's not scary.
We're not telling you it's something that we would advocate in every case.
Absolutely.
Particularly right now where rates are mm-hmm. high.
I've told people that if you're not hurting right now, wait a year or two. You know, but right now rates are getting lower.
So they're coming down.
They're starting to make more sense again.
Yep, certainly. So the Fed, I think, is kind of getting their arm twisted to... to lower rates.
Why would that be? I'm just kidding. There's not an election coming. What?
Of course not.
No. Well, I'm not going there.
I tell Scott, don't get me started on stuff because,
Well, I have my degree in economics, so I can actually make the case that it's an economic
constraint. I would love to,
But,
well, yeah, because, I mean, a lot of the markets are getting, like, people just are hurting.
Well, we went for a while, like 15 years almost, and the term for investors, we called it the Fed put. In other words, the Fed was artificially keeping the markets higher
mm-hmm.
by keeping interest rates lower. And so what that did is it forced more conservative savers to put money into the market because mm-hmm. they were getting zero return practically at banks.
Yeah.
Right. And so to try to get something, they were going into the market. So that was putting more buying pressure, which raised stock prices, and they were having a good time, but it killed the bond market.
Yeah, I was going to say, because I want you to talk about how quantitative easing or
printing money.
Yeah, printing money, essentially. Mm-hmm. They print money so that rates were lower and all these things are selling these bonds, but they're now trying to get that off their books. And that's one of the reasons that, you know, mortgages are struggling.
Yeah, so now the Fed, you know, once the inflation took off because they did too much quantitative easing, there was mm-hmm. too much cash sloshing around, which caused all prices to go up, wages to go up, etc. They had to raise rates in order to put
the brakes on
that. And there are some that are arguing that they succeeded in a soft landing. It appears that for all that we can see that things are.
Yeah, I listened to, I don't know, are you familiar with Barry Habib? He talks mostly about mortgage in the market, but he's kind of talked about that where it's like you're hoping that this is the soft landing, but some of the governors or whatever of the Federal Reserve for each state, is that, are they called governors or presidents of each?
There are 12 Federal Reserve districts in these United States, and each
has a
governor.
Yeah, one of them was talking about that she thinks that things are looking great and we're heading the right direction, but inflation might rear its ugly head again a little bit. And I'm like, let's just hope not.
Well,
you never know. Well, crystal ball, where are
you? But it's good to plan.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good to plan. We could get off on a whole
thing
I guess the bottom line is talking to you is number one to make sure that they have set up their retirement. And then if they're of the age of reverse mortgage, you know, at least having maybe a conversation if that's a good tool for them in their situation. But, you know, refinancing regular conventionals or FHAs to help.
Well, we've worked together with several clients now. Yeah. And I think universally what that has done is it's taken the mortgage payment out of their monthly requirement.
Yep.
And so that makes the rest of their assets stretch farther.
Well,
and
think about that. Even if your house payment's only like $1,100, what can a family do with an extra $1,100 a month? Mm-hmm. A whole bunch.
Yeah.
No, right? You can go to Disney. I'm just kidding. If you save up for a few months.
The important thing.
Yeah, the important stuff. But, you know, again, in making these kinds of decisions, it's always best to get with somebody that has the tools, the checklist, the knowledge. Yep. So you're making informed decision with all the critical facts. So you make a good decision, have the best outcome.
And, absolutely.
And that's what we're here for. So for free consultations, and you do that as well.
100%.
There's no obligation to do anything to come and get the information you need so you can make a sound decision.
And a lot of times we'll go to like our realtor partners and say, hey, can you tell me what you think this person's house is worth? Because I don't want somebody to have to pay for an appraisal. And, you know, find out, oh, crap, you know, we're $50,000 lower than the borrower thought. So I usually go to like a realtor or somebody to find out values so that I can get numbers fairly close for them so that they can make an educated decision on if it makes sense for them.
Yeah. And it's a painless process, really.
Yeah.
For our listeners, how can they find you, Allison?
Okay, so you can either go to my website, loanscanbefun.com, and there's actually a huge video library there talking about reverse mortgages and all the other different loan types that we do. Or you can give us a call at 385-383-0123. And my cell phone's 801-231-3830. So you can find me all over the place.
Awesome.
Or call Scott. He has my cards out front.
Yeah. We do. Now, if a person decided they wanted to get a reverse mortgage, it's not as simple as just turning in an application. They have to complete a course first, right?
Yeah. So there is a course required, but it honestly takes like a half hour to an hour, either over the phone or in person. And that is separate from the mortgage company. It is a HUD requirement. And so they go to a third party and they usually pay for that out of their pocket. And they have to take a course. And it's to make sure that their lender has educated them, but just making sure that they understand what they're signing up for. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's really not bad. And a lot of times the over-the-phone ones are super slick.
And what's a fee for that?
I've seen it anywhere. I've seen some that were free, which surprised me, which was awesome, up to about $200.
Okay. And you'd have all that information.
Yeah. And I can't tell you, like, we are not allowed to tell them which counselors to go to. Like, I can't even say
you
that
just
I could
give
control.
Them a list.
I give them a list and I say, here's a list of people you can pick from.
Call two or three.
Call two or three, get some pricing and let me know. And we usually send the proposal to the borrower because it has like a code on it for the counselor. And the counselor can see the same documents that we have given them.
Okay.
It's awesome. Really nice.
All right. Well, super, Allison. Thank you.
Absolutely.
It's been so fun to have you.
Well, and you're a super genius. We were talking about, we had you on our podcast and we learned so much from you. So thanks for having me.
Elise, any more questions?
No. Talk with a financial advisor and talk with a mortgage loan officer.
And specifically,
like Allison.
Scott Nelson.
Yes, Scott Nelson.
Absolutely.
We have Zoom.
Thank you.
We can go anywhere.
Yep.
So.
Yeah.
Well, we appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Absolutely.
Make good choices.
Okay.
If you found this information useful, please share it. If there is something you hear that raises a question, you can sign up for our free consultation as well as sign up for our free newsletter. Visit askscottnelson.com to sign up. Thanks for listening. Remember, if you plan well, you can retire happy.
The information provided is for educational purposes only and is not intended as investment advice for anyone. All information discussed is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. The views presented today are those of SLN Financial Incorporated and do not necessarily represent the views of Alpha Star Capital Management, LLC. The opinions expressed are subject to change without notice and do not constitute financial, legal, or tax advice. Please consult your financial professional before executing any financial strategy. Investment advisory and financial planning services are offered through Alpha Star Capital Management, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Alpha Star and SLN Financial Incorporated are independent entities.